tomorrow, we're going to be live in studio. We will not be at Bonnikers. They're doing a technical thing, so I was out meeting with them today. So we got everything ready to go. I think we're going to go back-to-back on the 21st and on the 28th of July. So we're going to go back-to-back, and we should have Senator Thad Altman and George Lemieux. He was on the program yesterday. In August, we're going to have some big-name guests. We're looking at Senator Marco Rubio because it will be the August recess. So we'll have the live town hall summer, the summer tour of the town hall forum of the Ed Dean radio program coast to coast here in the state of Florida. And thanks so much for tuning in. The email address, eddeanradio@gmail.com, eddeanradio@gmail.com. We got the chat board up on the website at eddeanradio.com, where you can catch the webcams and the audio version. But if you want to go to Facebook, that's where I normally chat with many of you, is on Facebook. So again, we will not be at Bonnikers tomorrow, but we'll be back to back on the 21st and the 28th of July. For further contact information, bonnikersseafood.com. Coming up the next hour, we're going to talk about the issue of race, the gay marriage pledge. Does there even need to be one? Tim Pawlenty and both Mitt Romney have said that they're not going to sign it. And we'll talk about that in a little bit. And also, Ron Paul says that he is not running for re-election. So he's going to try to focus everything. So we'll talk about debate. That all coming your way. On the Newsmaker line on the Ed Dean Radio Show, my friend, I'll always love having come on, Bryce Shanka, who is the Deputy Director for the 10thAmendmentCenter.com. How are you?
I'm good, Ed. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. What is it, before we get to nullification, I always find it interesting. The AP had reported on Friday when unemployment went up again to 9.2. It said that 30, now follow me with the key word here, and this is what I want liberals to defend, which they can't, Bryce, that 34,000 government jobs, not federal, but state, like California where you're at, Florida where I'm at, were lost. Doesn't that basically prove the point that, remember when the liberals were saying it wasn't the creation of jobs, it was saving jobs? Well, I guess it proves the point that the stimulus didn't even save jobs when you've got almost 500 to 800 per state that are losing government jobs. The stimulus didn't work, did it, Bryce?
No, and it's all pretty simple math. I mean, everything that government tries to do is going to be 10 times as expensive as letting things happen naturally in the way they're supposed to. For instance, the federal jobs program, I think I saw some statistic that showed that it costs $400,000 per job to do that.
Yeah.
And they're creating $40,000 jobs. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's one out there that says four. There's another one that says 278,300,000. But you're right, within the same ballpark. Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, all of these things are approaching the problem the wrong way. We need to get back to smaller government, letting our communities operate on an organic basis and operate with their best interest in mind instead of some bureaucrat's best interest in mind.
Bryce Shanka is on the Ed Dean Radio program. He's the Deputy Director for the 10th Amendment Center. The website contact information is 10thAmendmentCenter.com, 10thAmendmentCenter.com. Are you guys with Andrew Nappy, the state chair here in Florida, are you guys still planning a big turnout coming up in the next few months down in Jacksonville? What's the story with that lately?
Yeah, we've got Jacksonville, one of the latest stops that we're planning for the Nullify Now tour. That's going to be the second half of October this year. The finances are all in place. We're just, selecting a venue. But it should be bigger and better. We've got Sheriff Richard Mack, which a lot of people are excited about seeing. And we've got Jack Hunter, who's an up-and-coming, journalist and radio personality himself. He was excellent. He went to our Chattanooga Nullify Now back in October last year and spoke there, and was absolutely magnificent.
We got the information from Andrew, so we're going to be running a bunch of stuff to help you guys out to get a good crowd out there. Is it? And we're going to be out there coming up that time too. So I'm looking forward to see you guys out there.
Great, yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah,
for those who missed our last event in Orlando, this is going to be bigger and better. We've definitely learned a thing or two after doing these shows, 9 times in the last 9 months. And for those that had issues with the lunch break last time, we got that all figured out. So just come on out and have fun.
What's the story with, last time you were on with us about a month or so ago, we talked about the TSAs in Texas, and throughout several areas of other states in the rest of the country that we're going to say, listen, we're not going to accept it because of what it's doing, which many people is an invasion of privacy. What have we heard about that as of lately?
Well, as always, this is not an easy fight. I mean, you're taking on the federal government. You're taking on one of the biggest and baddest entities on the planet. And so when you take away their toys, they tend to react. And, you know, the initial response was to shut down air travel in Texas. And, of course, they're not ever really going to do that. It was just a threat. But there's been some jockeying in Texas. I think that what it's come down to is the people are really activated, and there's a climate there now, which is what you need for liberty, which is that the people are absolutely fed up with the legislators. There's a ton of pressure, and you know, I have a feeling in the next couple of election cycles it's going to be reflected. But they have gotten a message that we like to push, which is don't wait around for the perfect candidates to show up and take office. Just start hammering who's in there right now, today. And so they've got a lot done. They didn't see a complete success, but we don't expect these types of bills to make it through on the first try or even the second try. I mean, this is a long process. There's a lot of things that have to take place before you're going to see a real victory. But Texas isn't the only state. I believe New Jersey, New Hampshire, I think Hawaii was even introducing one. But this idea is obviously something that the people want. They don't want to be, you know, molested in an airport without probable cause, and I don't think that that's unreasonable.
I am fascinated, as always, history, which is prevalent today, because I have to come on this program, and you know, Bryce, we talk about the revision of history. Well, I have to revise the revision of history. When you especially talk about nullification, everything's a nullification. Again, Bryce, unfortunately, you and I are friends, and I love it when you break it down, but it seems that every time you come on, we have to again remind people that when you talk about nullification, and you may have to explain it again, people keep thinking you're talking about slavery and secession that we saw back in the 1860s, the war between the states. Would you please explain, and again, for the audience out there, for all those liberals, what the terminology of nullification really is?
Sure. Well, if you want to take it back to the original cause of the Civil War, the original cause of the Civil War was nullification, but it wasn't what people think of now after going through government school. It wasn't that South deciding to nullify the federal government. In fact, it was quite the opposite. The states in the South were upset because northern states were refusing federal orders to return slaves to the South.
That's right.
That was nullification that was happening at the time, and that's what actually was one of the causes of the Civil War.
All right, wait. Explain that one more time to the audience. Again, what you just said. Repeat what you just said about the North and slaves. Go ahead.
Federal laws were already in place at the time of the Civil War,
right,
protecting slavery, requiring slaves to be returned to the South. And northern states, one in particular, Pennsylvania, said, we refuse to do this. We are not going to send these people back. We consider them free men, just like we are, and we're not going to do it. And there was a sentiment that was building, and other states in the North were starting to go along with that, and that was one of the real triggers in the southern states. And you can read it right in Calhoun's own words, and he's supposed to be paraded around as like one of the bad guys in the nullification corner. No, in his own words, nullification was the reason why he was upset. They were tired of the northern states defying federal law and protecting slaves, protecting escaped slaves. So it's really been turned on its head. You know, now you got Rachel Maddow, coming on NBC saying that 10th Amendment Center are a bunch of neo-Confederates who just want to bring about the return of the Civil War. So you can see it's 180 degrees from the truth.
I gotta admit, I mean, I laugh at liberalism, so don't get offended, but neo-Confederates, that's kind of funny, to be honest with you, because it's coming from who it said. That's the reason why I'm laughing.
Sure. Yeah, but I mean, yeah, it's all just fantasy land. It's all just spin, and they're trying to grab whatever they can to try to arrest the momentum and to arrest the acceleration of this movement. And the fact is, people just want it. It's just getting bigger and bigger all the time. and the demand is, again, for 2 years, demand has been impossible to keep up with for us at 10th Amendment Center.
Right.
It's just, it's moving that fast. So yeah, then you can look at the Civil War and you can say that. Really, if you look at oppression of man through history, that has come at the hands of the centralized state far more than it's come at the hands of localized societies where communities have, power to regulate themselves. The track record of the centralized state is pretty much 100% leading to tyranny. And so it's crazy to me that people that are really interested in this Obama administration, for instance, think that there's no way it can ever, turn into a bad deal for them. History doesn't show that. The behavior of the Obama administration certainly doesn't show that. And so, yeah, the entire argument really, it just sits on nothing. It's just a bunch of fluff, and it doesn't have any basis. And once people take a look for themselves, they see that that the things that we talk about really make sense, and that they have a historical basis, and that they are things that are backed up by principles in history and documented by, human behavior and just human nature and what happens when you try to organize people in these ways.
Years ago, if someone ran, and I'm a conservative Republican, hence the word conservative first, but if you had somebody who ran on the Constitutional Party, they were laughed at. I must tell you, I think somebody who would run on the Constitutional Party today would actually do quite well in the polls because we're bringing up the issue about the Constitution here. But when you look at history, because those, like you said, the neo-Confederates, or what do they call? Is that what they called you, the neo-Confederates, Rachel Maddow?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's a funny term, but she's creepy anyways. But having said that, when those in the Tea Party, you guys, talk about, the states' rights and we the people, again, we're always laughed at. I mean, Abraham Lincoln even brought this up when you look at history. There was always this big debate, was it the states made the Constitution and the Union, or was it the we the people did that? Well, I always thought that the states were made of the people.
Yeah, exactly right. When they talk about the states, what they're referring to are the sovereigns of that state. Kevin Gutzman was on our radio program last week, and he had a great explanation of this that I learned from. When they refer to a state, they don't refer to the government of that state. They're referring to the sovereign, we the people, the people that live in that state. That is the state, not the state house, not the state legislature, not the governor. It is the people. And yeah, it's a great distinction. It's something we need to reclaim in our thinking and in our zeitgeist.
Because when I look back at history, I think that when you, The Conscience of a Conservative by Barry Goldwater, many people thought that Goldwater was ahead of his time. But one of the things that the Democrats and smartly had used against Goldwater, because I don't think the explanation was never properly explained, because when you and I talk about states' rights, today those in the liberal left call it a code word for slavery back in the day. Well, maybe back in the day. I mean, heck, Bryce, I mean, you and I would, if we were in the 1930s, you and I would be known as liberals, because if you recall, liberals were known as conservatives back in the 30s and 40s. Remember that? So I think that when you look at, for when you and I talk about states' rights, this has nothing to do with slavery. This has nothing to do with, we're talking about the economy. We're talking about those when it comes to, for example, health care, and should we be mandated by the federal government, because the Interstate Commerce Clause has been so abused in its interpretation that somehow everybody says, oh, you want to go back to the Goldwater days where the Democrats ran it against him when he used the term states' rights, and back then it was depicted as though it was slavery. Again, it is night and day.
Sure. Well, yeah, and like I said, that's all they have is rhetoric and empty claims and, trying to trigger people's emotions. Again, if somebody wants to try that argument with you, you can turn it right around and say the only reason why slavery even existed at that point was because of the support of the centralized state, the support of the federal government. It was already starting to break down on its own if it were just left up to the states.
you know, you bring up a good point. I love history. Yeah, many of those who were abolitionists but were afraid to come out there and, you know, were just, they had felt and they had saw that they just wanted slavery to go away. They felt in due time it would go away, which is always an interesting question. If you left it up to that, you know, would it be in the 20th century, would slavery still exist? I don't know. I find history a fascinating conversation, especially when it comes to the term of nullification of states' rights, and that some states, as you pointed out, shouldn't have to recognize unfunded mandates that are not properly given to them in the U.S. Constitution, i.e., the 10th Amendment.
Right, right. Well, and it comes down to, you know, another basic argument, which is, let's say... you know, let's say the federal government tries to enforce some kind of law that says we all have to buy, you know, 45 pounds of cheddar cheese every week. You know, it doesn't matter whether or not they pass it. If it's something that's not going to work, if it's something that's just ridiculous and, you know, or that wasn't a moralist example, but, I mean, there's other examples that are that violate people's morals. And just because a law is passed, does not mean that we have to blindly follow it. And this is another principle that I think people have to let go of and find a little bit of backbone and say, no, this is not right. We're not going to go along with it. And that's really the spirit of nullification. When these things do happen, like in the instance of the Federal Fugitive Slave Act, the good people of Pennsylvania, again, rose up and said, no, we are not going to do this. This is inhumane. We're not going to do this. Sorry.
When we come back from the other side of the break, let's bring up one of the reasons why, and it's not an open term, states' rights, but one of the terms which I don't think is properly authorized in the Constitution for us to accept health care, and that's the reason why it needs to be nullified if the Supreme Court deems it to be, well, part of the Interstate Commerce Clause. Let's discuss and debate this on the other side of the break. Bryce Shocker from the 10th Amendment Center, right here on the Ed Dean Radio Show. On the Ed Dean Radio Show, Bryce Shanka is the Deputy Director of the 10th Amendment Center. The website is 10thamendmentcenter.com, 10thamendmentcenter.com. Bryce, one of the things that states, whether it's Republicans or Democrats, where they cannot be taken serious, unfortunately, when it comes to the word nullify, is because when you throw a sweaty wad of money, raise the alcohol blood limit or raise the drinking age and raise the speed limits, we'll throw a sweaty wad of money at you, when it comes to Medicaid payments, an indirected unfunded unfunded mandate because the states have to pick up all the tabs. I mean, you understand why the word nullify becomes pretty much like a person in a strange land? It's not that it's been new, it's just we're bringing it back around. State government should have been nullifying many of federal laws, and they haven't done it. And now because Obama's in, it doesn't look like they have any credibility. You see where I'm going with that?
They don't have any credibility in terms of...
Bringing up the issue of nullification. They should have been doing this for 30 years.
Sure. Well, it's like, a lot of us have had friends like this where, maybe there's a woman in a relationship and she's being abused, but she still stays around. We sort of have this type of relationship with our federal government right now, even as in our state governments, and it's a long process, and there's a lot to untangle. But the key is the will of the people. At some point, if the trends keep going the way that I see them going, there will be states that will have enough strength, drawn from their people to stand up and say, okay, we need to detach from this. And it doesn't even have to be an entire state. I foresee communities, smaller communities, declaring themselves federal free zones, which just means we decide about our education, we decide about our food supply, we don't take any federal money, and so we don't have to go along with these mandates. It's a long, long road, and again, they've been pushing the other direction for intensely for 100 years, and obviously before that, since these kinds of conflicts go all the way back to 1798 with the Virginia and Kentucky resolutions. The money issue is an issue, but the bottom line is the money comes from the states, goes to the federal government, and then comes back again. So if you look at it in that sense, there is definitely a potential for the people of the states to assert themselves in that regard. Now, that's a big step, and that's when you're really talking about the rubber hitting the road, when you're talking about money, particularly money that the government is expecting.